Good evening, everyone. This is Reverend Charles Womack. Greetings from Faith-Driven, Grace-Living Ministries. Now, I would like to begin our message this evening with an image. Let's imagine you're the Cosby Show. Here, you're the Huxtables. This is an idolized image with the father leading his family as they all work in harmony and humor, as they display this wonderful institution of family. It's easy to fall into the assumption that other people's families are like this. We carry in our mind an airbrushed image of other people's lives. We often assume other people's husbands are enjoying loving intimacies with their wives, and other wives are enjoying the engaged support of husbands who understand them deeply. In addition, we may assume that other people's children love and respect their parents and set their counsels and gladly follow their example. I want to say you're right from the start. There are no perfect families. If someone tried to write a book called Model Families of the Bible, it would be a very short book indeed. Which families would we write about? Jacob? Jacob was blessed with 12 sons. He probably wished that God had given him daughters instead. The competition between the brothers, it became jealousy and envy, and at times your downright hatred, and it strained that family down to the core. Moses was a godly man, but look at the problems he had with his brother Aaron. Eli, he was a godly man, but his two sons, Hophni and Phinehas, they turned to the worst kinds of sins. David, he was a good godly man, actually a man after God's own heart, but he even found himself, in an unreconciled conflict with his son Absalom, who hated and tried to destroy him. If your son told you that he hates you, then guess what? You're in some good company. The king of Israel. Your faith is for fractured families. You're just scanning the family scene of Abraham. We have Abraham, the flawed father, Sarah, the perplexed wife, Hagar, the single mother, Ishmael, the troubled son. All of them, were fractured people. And all of them, experienced the grace of God. And because of this, let us accept as a title of our message this evening, Abraham, the flawed father. Once again, the title of our message this evening is Abraham, the flawed father. Now, our passage this evening will be coming from Genesis, the 12th chapter, verses 1 through 3. Now, Abraham, he was a great man of faith. He was greatly blessed of God. But men at their best, they're only the raw material in which God can begin a work of grace. The best Christians, including those we meet and greet on Sunday mornings, they are redeemed sinners in the process of being transformed into the image of his son, Jesus Christ. God puts his grace in jars of clay. And the Bible makes this very clear in the story of Abraham. The story, it begins when God calls Abraham to set out on a journey of faith. Now the Lord, he said to Abram, go from the country and the kindreds and your father's house to the land that I will show you. Genesis 12:1. God's promise to bless him and to make him a blessing. He say, in you, all the families of the earth shall be blessed. Genesis 12:2-3. So Abram went, a man of faith. Verse 4, that's the obedience of faith. I mean, yo, he's doing exactly what God has instructed him to do. Yo, he gave the patriarchs an unusual long lifespan. Abraham, yo, he lived for 175 years. Sarah, 127. So, yo, at the age of 75, yo, Abraham, he was halfway through his life. Just when he thought that things were settled, yo, God uproots him on a new journey of faith. A man of influence. Abraham, the Sarah, his wife, and Lot, his brother's son, and all their possessions that they had gathered, and the people that they had acquired in Haran. Genesis 12:5. Notice, y'all, Abraham, he was a man of some influence. An extended family travels with him. I mean, y'all, folk looked to him, and they depended in some sense on him for their livelihood. So when Abraham moves, they all move with him. A man of prayer. So he built there Shittim, an altar to the Lord. And there between Ai and Bethel, he built an altar to the Lord and called upon the name of the Lord. Genesis 12:7-8. Now, as Abram follows the Lord in faith and obedience, yo, we find him building altars. You see, yo, the altar was a place of worship, a place of prayer. Yo, Abram was a man of prayer, a man of remarkable experience. Now, the Lord said to Abram, the Lord appeared to Abram and said, to your offsprings I will give this land. So he built there an altar to the Lord who had appeared to him. Genesis 12:1-7. So the Lord, he spoke to Abram. More than that, your God, he actually came in a physical form and appeared to him as well. Abram was a remarkable person, a man of faith, a respected man with wide influence. We can say leadership. You know, he was a man of prayer, a man of remarkable spiritual experience. You know, what a blessing for Sarah to be married to him. I mean, don't you all think so? You know, those of us who know the story, we're not so sure. I mean, seriously though, y'all. I mean, this sounds, y'all, like a Christian woman's wish list. I mean, y'all, what else would one want in a husband? Lord, if you would give me a man of faith who is a spiritual leader, who will take leadership in our home, a man, Lord, who prays and who knows you. You know, despite the gifted man's relationship with God, you know, there can be a time for obedience, testing, and deception. But even your Abraham has feet of clay. You know, the Bible, it doesn't hide this from us. Your faith is not for airbrush saints. Your faith is for the real world of flawed fathers and fractured families. So, yo, we come to this extraordinary story. Abraham, yo, he had stretched himself in faith, believing God's promises to bless him. And he moved out, yo, in obedience to leave his home for the promised land. Now, faith tested. When Abram arrives in the promised land, yo, his faith is tested with two massive disappointments. First of all, yo, the land was occupied. At that time, the Canaanites were in the land. Genesis 1:6. Lord, I thought you were going to give me the land. I am. But it's occupied. I mean, don't you think that's the problem? It's going to be difficult. Yo, there was a famine in the land. Now, there is a famine in the land. 12th chapter, 10th verse. Imagine that, yo. A famine in the land of Canaan. Lord, the land I left had food. Yo, some of us know what this is like. Lord, I've extended myself in faith and obedience. I've taken on responsibility. Leadership. Lord, I've made sacrifices of time and money for the sake of ministry. Lord, have I spent myself in doing what I believe you were calling me to do? And now this. Lord, how could you allow this to happen? Especially, Lord, when I have been walking in obedience. Abraham, he goes down to Egypt to sojourn there, for the famine was severe in the land of Canaan. Genesis 12:10. You know, the Bible, it never suggests, y'all, that Abraham was doing something wrong here. You know, there was food in Egypt, but there was a famine in Canaan. You know, Abraham, he used his initiative, and he did, y'all, the obvious thing to provide for his family. You know, the Bible, it never in any way criticizes him for this. You know, the plan. Now, as he get near to Abraham, or to Egypt, Abraham, you know, he comes up with this famous plan of his. You see, you know, in ancient culture, a single woman, you know, she lived under the protection of her father. And in the absence of her father, with that role, you know, it went to her brother. This meant, you know, that when someone, you know, wanted to marry a woman, well, they had to negotiate with her father, or in his absence, her brother. You know, in that era, you know, if a man, you know, had his eye on a lady, and I'm sure, you know, this can be applied even today, but, you know, the number one rule was, get in good with the father, or in his absence, again, the brother. Because, you know, this is the guy you're going to be negotiating with. And having, you all a beautiful daughter or a beautiful sister, it meant that you can expect anybody who's trying to have a romantic interest in her, I mean, to treat you really, really good. So Abraham's wife, Sarah, you know, she was a strikingly beautiful woman. And he was about to enter Egypt. He said to Sarah, his wife, he said, I know that you are a woman beautiful in appearance. Genesis 12:11. You know, that was a good thing for Abraham to say, giving her that special compliment, especially as he's about to lead her into harm's way. Abraham said, I know that you are a woman beautiful in appearance. And when the Egyptians see you, they will say, this is his wife. Then they shall kill me. But they will leave you alone and let you live. Verse 12. In modern terms, Sarah, you are absolutely gorgeous. And I am so grateful that you are my wife. But baby, when we go other places, I don't know what go on with these guys. But they get all googly eyes over you. They get jealous of me. And then they want to kill me. So next time we go somewhere, especially here in Egypt, please tell these guys I am your brother. You know, they had pulled this deception off before. He said at every place, and you know, as they arrive in Egypt, Abraham says to Sarah, okay, baby, let's do the sister-brother act here. That way, baby, we will both be safe. What we're going to do, we're going to get the food that we need here in Egypt. And then we're going to get back to Canaan. Oh, come on, girl. We've done this before. It's going to be a piece of cake. Oh, nothing will come of this. But, you know, the plan, it backfires on them. You know, when secular viewpoint is applied to spiritual problems, you know, the results are always emotional and psychological chaos. When Abram entered Egypt, you know, the Egyptian, they saw that the woman was very beautiful. And when the princes of Pharaoh saw her, well, they praised her to Pharaoh. And the woman was taken into Pharaoh's house. Genesis 12:14-15. And the king, you know, he doesn't need to put his profile on eHarmony or Christian Mingle. I mean, you know, he has his own whole team of scouts out looking, you all, to find suitable candidates to be his wife. But one of his scouts spies Sarah. And the next thing you know, y'all, she is being taken into Pharaoh's house. I mean, y'all, can we imagine, y'all, the look between Abraham and Sarah as the scouts march her off? You all, this has never happened before. the plan that they have pulled off many times before. Well, it goes horribly wrong. Abraham, he looks at Sarah and thinks, what have we done? Sarah, she looks at Abraham and thinks, this is another fine mess you done got me into. You all to make matters worse. You're the Pharaoh. You're who believes you're that Abraham is Sarah's brother. You're he starts sending Abraham gifts. And I'm not talking about little gifts, y'all, but big money gifts. Because you're he wants to pave the way for a wedding, y'all. One that is already in the works. Y'all, for Sarah's sake. Pharaoh, he dealt well with Abraham. And he had sheep and oxen and donkeys and male servants, female donkeys and camels. Genesis 12:16. Yo, we're talking about big money. I mean, yo, think of two Ferraris, a red one and a yellow one. Yo, Abraham, he became a rich man, yo, as a result of this deception. Abraham, yo, he's on the outside of the palace, growing in wealth, but he's ashamed, powerless, and alienated from his wife. I have all the money, but I'm alienated in my marriage. You're the man of faith, influence, prayer, and remarkable spiritual presence. Yo, he finds himself desperately in need of the grace of God. Yo, every Christian husband knows what it's like to find himself there. Sarah, she's inside the palace, living in luxury and misery. She is powerless and vulnerable. I'm married to a man of faith and influence and prayer and spiritual experience. How in the world did I end up here? Your every Christian wife knows what it is to find herself there. Now, you know, I can't help but read this story without thinking of the New Testament passage. While we were still powerless, at the right time, Christ died for the ungodly. Romans 5:6. Oh, yeah, but for the grace of God. You know, when Abram failed his wife, your God protected her, and the Lord also afflicted Pharaoh and his house with great plagues because of Sarah, Abraham's wife. Genesis 12:17. So Pharaoh, yo, he called Abraham in, and he says to him, what have you done to me? I mean, why did you not tell me that this was your wife? Man, you get her and go. Genesis 12:18-19. Yo, this was by any standard, yo, the undeniable intervention of God. I mean, to save you all a marriage that was otherwise completely at an end. Yo, whenever there is trouble in a marriage, yo, there is always more than two people involved. The obvious question is, yo, what happened to Sarah during her time in the palace? I mean, did Pharaoh consummate a union with her? And was she violated? Yo, some scholars believe so. Because see, Pharaoh, yo, he speaks about taking her as his wife. Chapter 12:18. However, your other scholars, they point out, yo, that Esther, yo, when she was taken into the court of King Ahasuerus, yo, a whole year passed before she was ever brought before the king. But every your mother knows how much time y'all it takes to plan a wedding. I mean, how much time does it take to plan a royal wedding? And besides, y'all, to our surprise, y'all, we find y'all that Abraham and Sarah, y'all, they resort to this same brother-sister deception later on in chapter number 20. So it would be y'all hard to imagine that Sarah would agree to this. That Abraham, y'all, would even suggest it if Sarah, y'all, had been enduring the worst outcome that was in Egypt. Y'all, the fact that they had basically resorted to this old deception, would it suggest to me, y'all, that they were just thinking, you know, baby, we got away with this before. Let's try it again. So I believe, y'all, that God actually protected Sarah and Abraham from the worst outcome of their deception. Now, having said that, y'all, what happened in Egypt, I mean, it must have, y'all, put a tremendous strain on this relationship. I mean, can you all imagine, y'all, the emotional fallout? I mean, Sarah, she looks at her husband, and she feels massive disappointment. I trusted you. I followed you. I thought you were a godly man. I mean, how can I trust you again after this? Yo, she discovered, yo, that she was married to a man who is deeply flawed. It's not easy for Abraham to look into his wife's eyes. I mean, yo, he's struggling. I mean, he feels, yo, that he no longer have, yo, a right to her respect. I mean, he loses confidence in his own ability to lead. Yo, God gave him his wife back. But where do they go from here? I mean, yo, how can their marriage, yo, ever be restored? And the wonderful truth is that, yo, it was. Yo, I want to apply, yo, what we've learned thus far in the story by asking two questions. Number one, yo, what does faith mean to Sarah? And number two, yo, what does faith mean to Abraham as they face up to the fractures in their marriage? Now, through the eyes of Sarah, yo, give weight, yo, to the mystery of sin. Yo, pious people, yo, we sometimes seem shocked at stories like this in the Bible. I mean, here's Abraham, the great man of faith, and he is, yo, behaving like a fool, fallen into sin. And then, y'all, he did the same thing again later on. But, y'all, a mature Christian, y'all, we know, y'all, that the problem of sin runs deep in the human sin nature. I mean, it doesn't, y'all, just go away with the decision to follow Christ. Y'all, there are no perfect Christian families. At some point in our marriages, y'all, our spouse are going to disappoint us. Our husbands, y'all, our wives, y'all, they will fall short of our expectations. Our children, y'all, they will struggle. They will make some bad choices. And that's why, y'all, they need a redeemer, just like we do. Abraham and Sarah's marriage, y'all, I mean, it looked like it was over in Egypt. Y'all, but for the grace of God, it probably would have been over. I mean, their situation, y'all, it seemed impossible. I mean, what could Abraham do when Sarah, y'all, was marched off by the princes? I mean, Abraham, y'all, he was just one man. He didn't have, y'all, the power to storm past Pharaoh into his palace. Sarah, y'all, she was just one woman. I mean, she had no one to protect her, no means of escape. Y'all, she was powerless. Y'all, the situation was hopeless. Oh, y'all, but God, the omnipotent great I am, y'all, he does what he always do. Y'all, he stepped and saved both of them. Y'all, some of us, y'all, we may be saying to ourselves right now, I don't know what to do. I've tried everything. Nothing's working. I've messed up. I don't know how to make it right again. It's over. Oh, y'all, but for the grace of God, y'all, it would be over. But, y'all, we must look, y'all, to the miracles of God's grace. Y'all, that's what faith does. You know, if Sarah lived in our culture today, I'm sure she'd probably be saying something like this to Abraham. Bro, I'm out of here. Now, I know I made some vows to you when we got married, but after what just went down in Egypt, man, we done. D-O-N-E, done. And don't be talking to me about seeing no counselor. But, y'all, that's not what happened in the story. Yo, Sarah, yo, she walks out of Egypt by Abraham's side and presses on in faith and obedience. We may wonder, how could she do that? Sarah was faithful to Abraham because she had faith in God. She knew that God had promised to bless them. Not him and her, but to all of the families of the earth will be blessed. Genesis 12:3. Her faith, in the promises of God, they sustain her. And what came from her faithfulness? Christ did. He was born into the line. He descended from Abraham and Sarah. We must never underestimate what God may bring from the faithfulness in the hardest of circumstances. When we fail badly, the easiest thing in the world to do is to give up on our marriage and to give up on ourselves and to give up on God. Abraham, he doesn't do this, but he presses on in faith. This is what we must do. However flawed or fractured our life may be, embrace God. Return to him. Love him. Trust him. And walk with him. He will receive us with grace. And for our sake, God will deal well with us. So may God bless you and may God keep you is my prayer. We're all scarred and need the Lord. Good night, everyone. God bless.